All right, so we started a new lesson last week. Lesson 7, Wisdom from God, Lesson 7. And we're on question number 1. So what I'm going to do is read, this is from Proverbs 25, now we moved into the next chapter. So Proverbs 25, I'm just going to read the first 15 verses, so roughly half of the chapter. Proverbs 25, beginning in verse 1, and then of course we'll go back and address the specific verses. Proverbs 25, beginning in verse 1. These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, transcribed. It is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from the silver, and there comes out a vessel for the smith. Take away the wicked before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Do not claim honor in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of great men. For it is better that it be said to you, come up here, than for you to be placed lower in the presence of the prince, whom your eyes have seen. Do not go out hastily to argue your case. Otherwise, what will you do in the end when your neighbor humiliates you? Argue your case with your neighbor, and do not reveal the secret of another, or he who hears it will reproach you, and the evil report about you will not pass away. Like apples of gold and settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of his gifts falsely. By forbearance a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. All right, so that's the first 15 verses of Proverbs 25. This question number 1, how can a king's throne be established in righteousness, comes from verse 5. So we're talking about, and remember, Solomon is the king. He's a wise king. He's the wisest man who ever lived. Up until that point, of course, the Lord came afterwards. Jesus, that is. But Solomon, he makes a lot of references to being in the presence of the king. Well, everybody he knew was in the presence of the king. Everybody he knew around him, because he's the king. So he's giving good advice, but in this case, he's talking about kings, like he says in verse 2. It is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. So he's talking sort of generically about kings in general. In order to be a good king, and that's what he's talking about in verse 5, take away the wicked before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. This is not just him. This is any king. Any king says, take away the wicked before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Well, the question answers itself. How can a king's throne be established in righteousness? What'd you say?
I said, take away the wicked.
Yeah, take away the wicked before the king. It's interesting that it comes right after verse 4, because 4 is kind of the setup. Take away the dross from the silver, and there comes out a vessel for the smith. Do you know what dross is? Anybody?
That's the impurities in the ore.
Yeah, so when they're smelting, they're melting down the metal in order to purify it and make something that can be... when they do that with silver, it says... a vessel for the smith. So the smith, the silversmith, is the one who takes the silver and makes something out of it, whether it's a cup or a saucer or silverware or whatever the vessel is that he's making. But the dross is the impurities, like Richard said, in the ore, whatever they're melting down to begin with. All the stuff that floats to the top, that's called dross. And so it's the impurities is what it says. So it's drawing an analogy. The analogy is take away the dross from the silver, and it comes out of a vessel for the smith. So you're purifying it. So the analogy is take away the wicked before the king, and the throne will be established in righteousness. So you're purifying the king by taking the wicked away. Well, there's a lot to be said for good counsel, and there's a lot to be said for bad counsel. So he's already told us many times in Proverbs that there's wisdom in an abundance of counselors. Well, if you have an abundance of counselors, then you can throw out the bad ones and keep the good ones. Or listen to everybody's advice and make a wise decision, because now you know what all your options are. But when a king only has one counselor, and that counselor is wicked, then what do you got? You got a wicked king. And we have several examples of that in Scripture. I want to look first at some parallel passages. Look at 16:12, Proverbs 16:12. Some of these may not be exact parallels, but they're related. Proverbs 16, verse 12 says, "It is an abomination for kings to commit wicked acts, for a throne is established on righteousness." God expects a king to make wise decisions. God expects a king to be righteous and not lead his people astray. That's expected of kings. It's an abomination. That means that's something God hates. God. Proverbs 16:12.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Also look at 20, verse 8. Proverbs 20, verse 8. "A king who sits on a throne of justice disperses all evil with his eyes." If you're going to... I mean, it speaks for itself. I can put it in different words, but a king who sits on a throne of justice, that means he's a just king. And to be a just king, it means, and disperses, there's a marginal reference that says the word is sifts, S-I-F-T-S, sifts all evil with his eyes. That's pulling it out, pulling the evil out, kind of what we're talking about here.
Dross.
It's the dross. Proverbs 20, verse 26. "A wise king winnows the wicked and drives the threshing wheel over them." What does it mean to winnow?
It's a harvesting term.
Yeah, it's a harvesting term. I'm not a farmer, nor the son of a farmer.
It's when you throw the grain up in the air and the husks are blown away by the wind.
Yeah. You sound like a farmer. Sound like you know what you're doing. Yeah, so you throw the grain up in the air and the chaff blows away with the wind and the grain falls, and that's what you collect and make food out of it. I mean, it is food, but you make bread out of it or whatever. So with that, the way that reads then, a wise king winnows the wicked. So a wise king will be able to tell who his wicked counselors are and get rid of them. I mean, that's sort of that's what God expects him to do. Whether or not he does that, that's up to him. Every pot sits on its own bottom. So I want to talk about Solomon. We can talk about David a little bit too, but I want to turn to Solomon. Go to 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3. We're talking about establishing a king's throne in righteousness. And 1 Kings chapter 3 is where Solomon is about to become king. And God speaks with him. Starting in verse 3. 1 Kings 3, beginning in verse 3. "Now Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. The king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night, and God said, 'Ask what you wish me to give you.' Then Solomon said, 'You have shown great loving kindness to your servant David, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you. And you have reserved for him this great loving kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. Yet I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?' It was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. God said to him, 'Because you have asked this thing and have not asked for yourself long life, nor have you asked riches for yourself, nor have you asked for life, the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before, nor shall one like you arise after you. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you in all your days. If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments, as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days. Then Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream, and he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and he offered burnt offerings and made peace offerings and made a feast for all his servants. What you learn here is kind of a prescription. God is talking directly to Solomon, and he's giving him what he asked for, which was the wisdom and the discernment, which is great, because that's why we're reading Proverbs. Because Solomon wrote those wise sayings down so that we can learn from them. But he says, I'm not only giving you that, but I've given you riches and honor. But then, we were talking about this in Bible study. Claire's not here today. But we were talking about this in Bible study on Friday. About King Solomon and how he asked for wisdom. And God said, I'm not only going to give you that wisdom, but I'm going to give you riches and honor. And then the third one was conditional. The long life, that's in verse 14. If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days. So long life was conditional on his actions. Well, as far as we know, Solomon didn't live that long. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that he didn't have this conversation with God before he did what he did in verse 1 of this chapter.
Yeah, before he offered the...
affinity with Pharaoh.
Oh, right. That's right. Chapter 3, verse 1. Marriage alliance with Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Yeah, it is unfortunate that he didn't have that conversation first. But as far as him, you know, verse 7 says, yet I am but a little child. Now, I don't know if the other translations read that same way. The New American Standard says, I'm but a little child. That's a relative term. You know. Just in the course of study, jump over to 1 Chronicles chapter 3. 1 Chronicles chapter 3, when you look at the family of David, that's what it's outlined here. You notice David had at least 7 wives and plenty of concubines as well. But those aren't listed. But the wives are listed here and all the sons that came from those wives. And verses 1 through 4 are the first 6 children that were born, first 6 sons that were born in Hebron. And then in verse 5 it says, these were born to him in Jerusalem, Shemaiah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon, 4, by Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel. And then it lists 9 others, and it doesn't really say. It's kind of ambiguous as far as their mother or their mothers. Verses 6 through 9 lists 8 or 9 children. And then in verse 9 it says, and these were the sons of David besides the sons of the concubines, and Tamar was their sister. But according to this list, Solomon kind of comes in last of the wives. So if he was the youngest son of all those who were born in Hebron and Jerusalem, then he says, I'm a little child. Maybe that's just the way he looked at himself, but he was young. Go ahead.
We know that he was at least 20 years old because that when his son took over, his son was 41.
Ah, Rehoboam.
And Solomon had reigned for 40 years, so he was, I would say, at least 20 years old at that time. I think he was speaking in the sense of not having the experience.
Yeah.
And recognizing that if he wasn't because he was close to it, you know, as far as...
Yeah, I've always assumed he was around 22. Not 22, but 20 also. I've also thought he was around 20. And reigning for 40 years, And then we saw in 1 Kings 11, when he turns to, he's got 700 wives and 300 concubines. They turned his heart away from God. And he started serving other gods and building altars to other gods. And one of those was Molech, which was the one that you burn your children in the fire. So, I mean, he went from bad to worse. And then his life is over. So like I said, he may not have lived past around 60. So he didn't get that long life. Well, God made it conditional. I'll prolong your days as long as you're faithful. But he wasn't. And I mean, there's a lot of lessons we can learn from Solomon. While he was serving the Lord, and while he was the wisest man on earth, he wrote these books. You know, he didn't write them later. He wrote them while he had all that wisdom and he was being faithful to God. And so we can learn a lot from him. But we can also learn from the way his life ended. No matter how good you are in this life, your ticket's not punched. You still got to stay faithful. You still got to maintain.
It's interesting that the people of Israel still considered his wisdom ages later. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it says here in where we're reading now, in Proverbs 25,
yeah,
that it was Hezekiah's servants that copied these out.
The transcribed.
That's a number of generations past Solomon.
Right.
And so, yeah.
I was wondering that when I first read that, too, was were these found?
Like the book.
Like the book. Like they found Josiah. They found the book. And maybe these were just found later. It said, oh, look, there's some more Proverbs that Solomon wrote. Well, let's transcribe them. We'll transcribe them. Or does yours say copy? You mentioned copy. I was curious what they were transcribed from.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it could have been verbal or oral, because, you know, a lot of times they didn't have things written down. They just
Along. Well, that's a lot for it to have been oral, though.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
I would lean more towards that they found some various writings that they.
Yeah, well, I mean, transcription by definition is taking this writing in one language and transcribing it into another language on this other book. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what transcription is. And so however they were written before. The only thing I can use reasoning and say, well, if you had 700 wives, and many of them were from different countries, different nations, did he learn to speak other languages? More than likely. More than likely he spoke more than one language. I mean, you think about the Lord. The Lord spoke Greek, but he also spoke Hebrew. I don't know if he spoke Latin too. I mean, there were a lot of people who did. When they put up the sign over Jesus on the cross, it was written in three languages. So a lot of people spoke more than one language in that area. So it could be, it's a speculation. There's no way we can prove one way or the other what that means. But the point that Richard was making was that Hezekiah came many generations later, and he thought this was important enough that let's make sure that's part of the Proverbs, because he wrote it. If Solomon wrote it, let's get it on there. I want to take a look at where we leave off. First Kings 3. Go to 1 Kings 9. The unbelievable thing, well, it's not unbelievable because it's in the Bible, so we can believe it. But the incredible thing about Solomon turning away in 1 Kings 11 is that the Lord had actually appeared to him twice. I mean, how often has the Lord appeared to you? This minute. But twice in dreams, Solomon had an appearance of the Lord. Now, we don't know what that appearance was, but you know, what did he look like or anything like that. But chapter 9, 1 Kings 9, beginning in verse 1. Now, it came about when Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house and all that Solomon desired to do, that the Lord appeared to Solomon a second time, as he had appeared to him in Gibeon. The Lord said to him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication, which you have made before me. I have consecrated this house which you have built by putting my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. As for you, If you will walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you, and will keep my statutes and my ordinances, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, just as I promised your father David, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. But if you or your sons indeed turn away from following me and do not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, and go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them and the house which I have consecrated for my name, and I will cast out of my sight. So Israel will become a proverb and a byword among all peoples, and this house will become a heap of ruins. Everyone who passes by will be astonished and hiss and say, why has the Lord done this to this land and to this house? And they will say, because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt and adopted other gods and worshiped them and served them. Therefore, the Lord has brought all this adversity upon them. You know, you read a passage like that, and it's all prophesied. God said, here's exactly what's going to happen if you turn away. And that's why it just blows my mind thinking about Solomon, two chapters later. Now, I know your life is not written in books like this. It's many years later, but still, for him to have had God appear to him twice in dreams, and both times say, as long as you obey me, you'll have a long life and everything will go good for you. And then, just look at it, since it's only one page over. 1 Kings 11. Solomon had a heart problem. He fell for every woman he saw, apparently. I mean, you know, if you've ever raised boys, you know, it starts in elementary school. Boys fall in love with all the girls at school. Noah's laughing. It's like, yeah, it's true. But here he's a grown man, and he's still falling for every woman that bats her eyes at him. Now, King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh. That was the first one. Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the sons of Israel, you shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their gods. Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. And then it lists all the gods that he went after, most of them called detestable or abominations. It's just kind of mind-boggling. But the thing is, the reason I want to talk about it, we're talking about, the question is, how can a king's throne be established in righteousness? God told Solomon, here's how you do it. You obey my commands. You do my statutes, my commands. You live your life according to the words that I've given you, and you'll live a long life, and everything will go well for you. But he didn't. And so, who's my closest counselor? My closest counselor is my wife. Most men, I don't know if it's most men, some men don't. Some men aren't that way, but who were Solomon's counselors? He had 700 women pulling him toward their gods. I know you want to worship, you know, your Jehovah Yahweh person, but I want to worship, you know, this one. And you can have your God, but I want to worship this one. Please build me an altar. And he loved her, so he said, well, okay. So he builds an altar to this God, an altar to this God, an altar to this God. He's building altars all over the place for all these other gods. And the God of heaven is just going.
The wisdom went out the window.
Huh?
The wisdom went out the window.
Go ahead, Noah.
I'll read further down in 1 Kings 11.
Uh-huh.
God was easier on Solomon because of the faithfulness of his dad, David.
Right.
He said, I won't do it during your lifetime.
What verse are you in?
Because of your father, David.
What verse are you in?
12.
Yeah.
11 and 12. Yeah, I just wanted to point that out. That, I mean, the faithfulness of someone in your family might help you.
Well,
not to say we're not supposed to be faithful, but I mean,
He says, I will not do it, verse 12, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David, but I will tear it out of your hand, I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. God's plan was coming to pass. It's not like history was pre-written and we're just, you know, puppets living out God's plan. He knows how, he sees the big picture. God lives outside of time, space, and matter. So he's seeing the big picture, and all we know is if we're faithful and obedient to his word, everything will go well for us. And of course, I always lean back to the New Testament passage in Romans 8:28 that says, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. If we love God, which means we obey him, Jesus said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. So if we love God, then everything will go well for us, even if we end up dying on a cross. And I don't say that facetiously. We Christians in this country aren't persecuted like Christians in other countries. There are Christians today losing their life because they have faith in Christ. And we get ridiculed, we get mocked. That's really the worst part of our persecution, is just mocking and ridicule. We don't have the life and death situation that a lot of Christians have in life. But regardless of how your life goes, how it ends, everything's going to go well. It may not go well in this life, but if you got heaven waiting, whatever happens in this life is all worth it. If we just obey God, we'll have heaven forever. Forever. So that was that's the comment I wanted to make about that, is that Solomon was given the prescription. And he took the prescription for a while, and then he stopped taking it and lived his life the way he wanted to. And it led him away from God. And so he didn't have everything that he could have had. 2 Kings 23, looking down the road. I wanted to mention this. I don't want to read, you know, if we read the whole chapter, we'd get a really good picture of it, but we know the story. Richard brought it up earlier, the story of Josiah. Josiah's dad was evil. What was his name? Amon? Amon.
No, his dad was Manasseh.
Manasseh slept with his fathers in verse 18. Amon was 22 years old when he became king. So Manasseh and then Amon or whatever, and then Josiah was after that. So Josiah was Manasseh's grandson.
Oh.
But verse 20, chapter 22, verse 1 says Josiah was 8 years old when he became king. Verse 3 says in the 18th year of King Josiah, so 18 plus 8 is... Jenny's not here. At 26.
Where are you?
2 Kings 22.
Okay.
Yeah, so verse 3 says, in the 18th year of King Josiah, so he would be 26. The king sent Shaphan, the son of Hilkiah. I'm jumping down. Verse 8, Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the scribe, I found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. And Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan, who read it. Now, it's interesting when you're reading through this and you go, wait, they found the book of the law? Where had it been? It was on a coffee table, collecting dust, like a lot of people's Bibles. I'm just saying that facetiously. I don't know where it was, and you don't either. But they found it. And I don't know if they were searching through, you know, a cupboard or a closet up on a top shelf or something. What's this? Or scroll. I don't know, you know, how he found it, but he found it, and he brought it. He says, Shaphan the scribe, verse 9, came to the king and brought back word to the king and said, your servants have emptied out the money that was found in the house and have delivered it into the hand of the workmen who have the oversight of the house of the Lord. Moreover, Shaphan the scribe told the king, saying, Hilkiah the priest has given me a book. And Shaphan read it in the presence of the king. Now, that might have taken a while, but you'll notice the king wanted to hear it. When the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his clothes. Now, the rest of the chapter is very interesting. I mean, the prophetess, Huldah down there in verse, I guess that's 14, tells them, here's what the Lord says, I'm going to bring evil on this place and its inhabitants. But it says, jumping down to verse 19, but because your heart was tender and you humbled yourself before the Lord when you heard what I spoke against this place and against its inhabitants, that they should become a desolation and a curse, and you have torn your clothes and wept before me, I truly have heard you, declares the Lord. Therefore, behold, I will gather you to your fathers, and you will be gathered to your grave in peace, and your eyes will not see all the evil which I will bring on this place. So they brought word back to the king. This is an interesting story because the prophetess, Huldah, is telling him, I have some good news and I have some bad news. The bad news is God's going to destroy this place. The good news is you're going to die first. I mean, you're not going to see it because God's going to take you first. Well, that kind of feels like bad news and bad news. But God had been fed up with all the fathers, because it's not just, I mean, we always focus on the kings, but the kings are just the leaders. But you know who's behind the leaders is followers. That's who's behind the leaders. So if there's a bad king, you got a whole bunch of bad people following that king. So that was the idea. But chapter 23 is all about the reforms. So Josiah, he was young, 26 when he found the law. And what does he do? He takes it to heart. He says, this is what God wants me to do. So he spends the next, well, all through chapter 23, taking down all the high places, taking down all the idol worship, destroying the altars of all the other gods all over the place, and basically doing a lot of reform through the area. He took it to heart, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. He reinstituted the Passover. They hadn't been practicing the Passover. They just put that aside. Well, why? Because the book was up on the top shelf somewhere. They didn't even know where the book was. They found the book. So they're not practicing the Passover, but he sees in the book, oh, the 14th of Nisan, we're supposed to have Passover. We're supposed to, you know, kill the lamb and do all the stuff we're supposed to do. So he reinstitutes that. Verse 24 says he removed the mediums and the spiritists. Mediums, those are people that contact the dead. So instead of worshiping the Lord, they're going to people and saying, hey, can you contact my grandpa and find out what I'm supposed to be doing? And what's the medium doing? Lying? They weren't actually contacting grandpa. They're saying, oh, your grandfather says you should do this. You're making stuff up. I'll take your money now. It works the same today. You know, fortune tellers do the same thing today. You know, I'll contact whoever you want me to contact for money. You give me the money, I'll tell you what they said. Anyway, verse 25 says, before him there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses, nor did any like him arise after him. It says right there, he was the best king they ever had. You know, prior to that it was Solomon, but what happened to him? We know, we just read it. But Josiah turned out to be the best. It's like, yeah, you know, and you can't hardly help but realize that the guilty conscience is the big thing. He was 26 years old and suddenly realizes that not only has my father been sinning against God, but all of my grandfather and everybody else down the line, and the whole land is full of idol worship. The whole land is full of everything that God hates. So what am I supposed to do? I'm king. God made me king. I'm going to make some changes. And so he does. And it was great. So, what's that?
Took a bulldozer to all of it.
Did they have bulldozers then?
Yeah. It's just like, you know, when they transcribe the words of the proverb.
Yeah.
Because it's just that PDF file they needed to, anyway.
Transcribed it from a PDF.
Right. Anyway, what strikes me here is, and I don't know whether it's a point that God was trying to make or not, but Hilkiah found the book of the law and he gave it to Shaphan the scribe and said, I have found the book of the law. And then when Shaphan goes to Josiah, he says, Hilkiah gave me a book. Shaphan the scribe.
Yeah.
I don't know whether God is trying to make a point here that Shaphan the scribe didn't even know what book it was.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a scribe.
Yeah.
His job is to inscribe. Yeah. And to copy. That's what they did. They copied.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. I mean, so what do we learn from all this? The question, how can a king's throne be established in righteousness? You got to get rid of the wicked people around you and surround yourself with people that want to serve the Lord. And in this case, it doesn't tell us about his counselors, but there's some, I'm trying to say, necessary conclusions we can come to. When it talks about Josiah right at the beginning, go back to 22. Josiah 22, verse 1. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jedida, the daughter of Adiah of Boscath. Now, it mentions her name and who her father was, but she was the one raising him. And we can necessarily conclude that she must have taught him some things. He was willing to accept the law when it was given to him. He must have known some things, like, you know, the God of our fathers brought us out of Egyptian bondage. Basic truths that everybody should know. If you're a Jew, I mean, if you're a Jew in this time, you should know at least that much history, that we didn't even become a nation until we were in captivity down in Egypt. And Moses brought us up, and they would have remembered. Even the Jews that had been in Egypt, well, they weren't even called Jews then, the Hebrews that were in Egypt for 400 years, when Moses came down and said, you know, the God of your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me. They knew who that was. They knew who Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were. So I can only assume that Josiah's mom had taught him who Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were, and how our nation came to be, and how we got from up here from Egypt and all that. Anyway, I'm speculating, but I think that it's a safe speculation to realize that his heart wasn't hardened by his father. You know, his father was this king Amon. Look at Amon back in chapter 22 or chapter 21, verse 20. Talk about Amon. He did evil in the sight of the Lord as Manasseh his father had done. For he walked in all the way that his father had walked and served the idols that his father had served and worshipped them. So he forsook the Lord, the God of his fathers, and did not walk in the way of the Lord. The servants of Amon conspired against him and killed the king in his own house. He was killed by his own servants. I mean, he was so wicked that even his own servants said, he's got to go. I mean, they killed him. His own people killed him. And then it says, verse 24, then the people of the land killed all those who had conspired against King Amon, and the people of the land made Josiah his son king in his place. So, anyway, very interesting stuff in the Old Testament. I want to go back in time. So we're in the Old Testament, so I'm not going to go forward. I'm going to go back one more time to Rehoboam. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 12. I think what caught my eye on this question was, how can a king's throne be established in righteousness? There's a lot of kings mentioned in Scripture, so we'll just look at a few of them. But 1 Kings chapter 12, so you'll notice verse 43 of chapter 11 says, Solomon slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of his father David, and his son Rehoboam reigned in his place. So it's just the natural occurrence. The king dies, his son becomes king, usually the oldest son. Then Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. Now when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard of it, he was living in Egypt, for he was yet in Egypt, where he had fled from the presence of King Solomon. Now if you don't remember the story, you'll notice, jump up to, let's see,
11.
Yeah. In 11...
Elijah,
had him rip the garment in verse 30. It says, they said in 34, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him prince all the days of his life for David. Yeah. Right, I'm thinking of the first time that that's mentioned was when, verse 11. 1 Kings 11:11, when the Lord said to Solomon, "Because you have done this and have not kept my covenant and my statutes which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant." Well, the servant was Jeroboam. Is that the second bell? Yeah. The servant was Jeroboam. But then Solomon says he needs to die. And when Solomon went after Jeroboam, Jeroboam said, "I'm out of here." And he went to Egypt. And he stayed there until Solomon died. And that's when he came back. And so we'll talk more about it next week. Do you have something else?
Well, I was just it's just that God also told Jeroboam that
That he was going to get it.
And he said, and in verse 37, "I will take you, and you shall reign according to all your soul's desire, and shall be king over Israel. And it shall be, if thou wilt hearken unto all that I command thee, and wilt walk in my ways, and do what is right in mine eyes, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as David my servant did, that I will be with thee, and will build thee a sure house, as I built for David, and will give Israel unto thee." So,
it was the same conditional promise.
Exactly. It was he didn't even attempt, not even a
mild attempt.
But the Lord gave him the option.
Yeah, he could have. Free will.
That little word is in there a lot.
If you have a tiny little word, it's this big. This big.
Okay. I wonder when God scratches his head a lot, saying these people just. Keep fighting with elephants in the room, thinking they're going to win.
Yeah. That's about the size of it.
So, we'll continue
with question one. I'm almost done. I mean, I'm almost done with my marginal parallel passages, but yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about it.